Again, good morning and or good afternoon, depending on where you are located, and welcome once again to emforum.org. I'm Amy Sebring, and will serve as your host and moderator today, and we are very glad you could join us. For any first-timers, we will be providing some instructions as we go along, so you can relax and participate with us, and we do want you to take part in this discussion. If you need assistance, please select Help Desk from the drop-down options in the Q&A panel or in the chat panel, and our associate, Lori Weber, will try to assist you. Now, today, we are pleased to feature the disaster services provided by the Tennessee Baptist Convention. The state has more than 11,000 trained volunteers from churches and associations who are ready to deploy with a wide range of response assets. First, for any first-timers, we will begin with an overview presentation, and then we will proceed with your questions or comments. We will provide further instructions just before we begin the Q&A, but we ask you not to submit your question or comment until we get to that part of the program. And you may wish to make a note of any questions you have as we go along. Today's recordings and a copy of the slides will be available from our site later today, and a transcript will be available early next week. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce David Akers, State Disaster Relief Director since 2005. An ordained minister, the Reverend Akers previously held a number of pastoral and administrative positions with churches in Tennessee. Welcome, David, and thank you very much for being with us today. And I now turn the floor over to you to start us off, please.
Thank you, Amy. It's really a privilege of mine to be able to be a part of this webinar this morning and just to be able to answer some questions a little bit later on about what we do in Tennessee Baptist Disaster Relief. But just want to give you a quick overview of what we do in disaster relief ministry with Tennessee Baptist. And I don't seem to have control of it yet, Amy. It's not moving. So I'm sorry. Here we go.
There.
Oh, we got it.
Thank
yeah.
You.
Yeah, so you were saying giving instructions a while ago. Yeah, I'm the first one that needs instructions. So it just, in disaster relief ministry in Tennessee, and we do work under the Southern Baptist Disaster Relief, and so we have 42 state conventions, and all of our state conventions are involved in disaster relief ministry. We work hand in hand with the American Red Cross and Salvation Army as they're trying to feed people in mass care after a disaster takes place. And so I just wanted to talk to you about some of the things that we do well as far as disaster relief is concerned. Is number one, we are known for feeding in Tennessee. We have six mass feeding kitchens that are mobile kitchen units that are totally self-contained that we can pull out on a church parking lot. And we have our own gas bottles that we take with us to be able to use on the kitchen. We can provide our own water supply. All those things are readily available to us with our mobile kitchens. And we have kitchens that can do anywhere from about 5,000 meals a day. And we have one state kitchen that can do up to about 50,000 meals a day. And we can combine them all together and we can feed a pretty good population in a short period of time with our mobile kitchen. One of the things about our feeding unit and all is we have lead cooks all across the state that work with us on our kitchens. They have all been through a lot of different training, especially the ServSafe, which is required for all restaurants in the state of Tennessee. And so we put them through the ServSafe training so that they can meet the qualifications when the health department comes out to be able to inspect and tell us what we're doing right and tell us what we're doing wrong. And our volunteers that work on our state feeding are on our feeding kitchens. They have anywhere from 3 to 6 hours of training before we actually send them out. We have a Part A class, which is a classroom safety class that we put them through, give them all the details of what's right, what's wrong, what temperatures and things like that to use. And then we actually have a Part B, which is a hands-on where they actually go out with one of our feeding units and actually working under someone else who has already been through the training. So we're well known for our feeding, and it's well planned out. We have menus that's planned well in advance. If we're called today and said that we needed to take 20,000 meals to a certain location, we can pick up the phone and call our supplier and tell them that we want so many meals of menu number 6 or so many meals of menu number 10, and we don't have to do a lot of figuring or anything like that. It's all automatically done for us through the computers, and they send the food supply out that we need to be able to cook the meals that are needed by Red Cross or Salvation Army. We also do a good job with child care. This is one of those things that we're pretty proud of. We have a lot of our trained volunteers who meet the criteria for Department of Children's Services in almost every state in the United States, where they go through background checks and where they go through the training to be qualified to be able to take care of children on a temporary basis when we go out. We only have one child care unit, as we call it. We have a large trailer full of equipment that we can pull out and we can set up in a fellowship hall or a gymnasium or a community center where we have beds and we have rocking chairs and we have carpet for the floor and all kinds of things that we can use to be able to take care of children while moms and dads are working on getting their house back in order, or even before schools open back up to where moms and dads can go back to work and we can take care of their kids while they're doing that. We also have a lot of recovery units in Tennessee. Recovery units is what we call the mud out or flood recovery units, to where they go in after a flooding has taken place and they actually clean the house out as far as their wet couches and chairs and carpet on the floor, and even when the sheetrock is wet up the wall, where they can cut it off to where it will keep from seeping on up the wall and creating more damage. Then we also have some of those teams that will come back in and actually rebuild that house and put the sheetrock back down and help it as much as possible. We have chainsaw teams. In Tennessee, we have about 110 chainsaw teams across the state. Some of these teams are quite well equipped, where they have skid steers with the grappling buckets on the front to where they can pick up the trash, and carry it to the road to where it can be hauled off by the city or the county after a disaster. And then just cleanup crews that can go in and help pick up, things out of yards and out of fields and things like that. Some of the other developed units that we have is really valuable to us in Tennessee, but it's valuable to the shelters that we try to set up with Red Cross and others, is we have shower units. Tennessee's blessed with about 16 shower trailers. These are mobile units that, again, are self-contained, to where we have our own fuel supplies, to where we can provide hot water for people to have a good hot shower in those shelters, but also our volunteers that go out to work, that we can actually provide good showers for them after the jobs are done in the afternoon. And along with those shower units, we also have a lot, several mobile laundry units that can provide laundry, clean up laundry for the people in the communities, and as well as our volunteers that go out there that they can take care of them while they're out. We also have crisis counseling or chaplains that are trained, that can work in the community, that can go out and go door to door and help with the community counseling, or help give some hope back to some of those people who have been through some real tragic events in their life. We also use our chaplains or crisis counselors to go with each one of our units that go out, that just kind of keep a watch on our volunteers that are out there, and kind of a safety officer too, not necessarily for whether a tree is going to fall on them or not, but kind of watch for dehydration and things like that, and tiredness. Sometimes you have to tell people they're more tired than they really are. And so we use our counselors, our chaplains to do that. We do have a pretty good bank of interpreters across the state. I can't tell you how many different languages they speak, but right here in the state of Tennessee, we have a lot of different languages that are spoken. Just had one lady tell me the other day that one of the classes here in the Nashville area, one of the schools in the Nashville area, I think it's a second or third grade class. They have 16 different languages that's spoken in this one particular classroom. So you can see we need a lot of interpreters in Tennessee. Advocacy, we do have people who will go out after a disaster and try to work with the people and make sure that they're getting what they need. It's a lot like we would work with the Methodist group in doing case management to be able to make sure that we take care of the people and meet their needs and get them back on the road to recovery. We do have a group called Rebuild. We call them Baptist Builders in our ministry. Where after a disaster is over with, when it's no longer declared a disaster area, we have a lot of people from our churches across the state will go in and help do rebuild, reconstruction. After Hurricane Katrina, we rebuilt better than 70 houses in Pass Christian, Mississippi, just from the ground up and helping people get back into their homes. Right now we're involved in Long Island, New York, and Staten Island, New York, trying to help people rebuild their homes up there. So we're sending rebuild teams to that area. Communication, we do have a large communications trailer that we take out that has a satellite dish on top of it to where we can put a satellite up in the air and send and receive emails and voicemails. But we also have a ham radio. We have citizens band. We have a business bands. All kinds of radios on our communications trailer to where we can stay in communication with the people back here at home when we're doing disaster, but then we can also relay messages back and forth when the power is down and especially when the communication is down. Our levels of involvement of how we work is when there is a large disaster such as we've seen with Katrina, but some of the other disasters, the Oklahoma disasters that took place back in May. On a national response, we are actually called out by the North American Mission Board to go to these other places and help, whether it may be mass feeding, whether it may be our recovery teams, or even our chaplains, our crisis counseling teams, that can go and actually help out in those areas. State response, we're in charge of that here at the Tennessee Baptist Convention. When a large disaster happens here in the state of Tennessee, we look to our teams that are all across the state, from Mountain City to Memphis, to be able to help us locally. And if they call us and say this is bigger than what we are, then we put out a call to other associations or other church teams across the state that can go in and help out. That kind of sums up our associational response to associations. We have 65 of those across the state of Tennessee, and we have a lot of disaster relief volunteers in each one of those associations that can, number one, respond, but also be the eyes on the ground to be able to see what the needs really are and to be able to communicate back with us here at the Tennessee Baptist Convention to be able to know how we need to respond to be able to help out there in their local association. We are really pushing for what we call disaster-prepared churches, helping churches understand more about what the disasters are in their local communities or what could possibly be a disaster in their local community and help them be prepared to be able to respond when one of those disasters help or happen. So in the state of Tennessee, we look to any interested Tennessee Baptists. If they call us and say they want to be involved in disaster relief, we point them toward one of our trainings in the state of Tennessee, and we do trainings all across the state to where we help people be qualified, to help them be certified and to be credentialed. We do a background check on everybody who works with us in the Tennessee Baptist Convention. They go through a criminal and a sex offender background check. So that we know that when we put a credential or a badge on these people, that we know who is responding, we know where we're sending them at, that they're going to be the kind of people that we want to for people out there to associate with, and we want them to be the kind of people that represent us as Tennessee Baptists out there in the field. So as I said, we do training all across the state, We do training in every one of our units that you see listed there on feeding unit, child care, shower units, you know, chainsaw. I can't teach someone how to run a chainsaw, but we do go through a lot of safety precautions as far as the chainsaw is concerned and help them understand what we do. In Tennessee, we do have a lot of state-sanctioned units, which is a ministry in the church or the association that's subject to call for the state or multi-state response. They have our disaster relief logos on their trailers, on their trucks, when they go out and everything. And so they represent their local church or local association, but they also represent the Tennessee Baptist Convention, and they really represent the Southern Baptist Convention because, like I said, we're working under the umbrella of the Southern Baptist Convention when they go out. There are some autonomous units in the state of Tennessee that will respond when a disaster happens. They'll respond locally. And all of you know that as long as there's been disasters and as long as there's been churches, churches have been helping out in disasters. And so that's where we get a lot of our in Tennessee, that's where we get all of our volunteers from as far as Tennessee Baptist is concerned. But we have a lot of great volunteers that come from our churches. But a four-step process that we fall under, become a state sanction as any church or association unit, they have to go through the introduction to Southern Baptist Disaster Relief, which is about a three-hour course that we take them through. And then we redo this. We recertify people every 3 years. Just take them back through the introduction class. It's not a three-hour class. After they've been through the first one, it's usually about 50 minutes to an hour of just bringing them up to date on what we do in disaster relief and how we work alongside our partners like Red Cross and Salvation Army, but also Homeland Security and FEMA and the VOAD groups and things like that that we work alongside of. And then, we do have in-depth training that we do for all of our other disciplines that we do out there in the field. In Southern Baptist Life, we know the people that are in charge by the color of a hat that they wear. After you've gone through a training introduction to Southern Baptist Disaster Relief and one of the other disciplines that we do, we give them a yellow hat that has disaster relief on the front of it. Some of those who are, I won't say more qualified, but maybe just a little more knowledgeable of what we're doing in disaster relief, they're put through what we call a blue cap training. Blue cap training helps them understand the forms that we have to fill out. They understand who they're working with out there in the field and all, and so they go through the blue cap training. They also have a letter of agreement that they sign that says that the disaster team that they have is ready and available for us to use when a disaster happens. Whether it's in Tennessee or whether it's out of Tennessee. They also always have the ability to say, no, we can't go at this time. Some of our volunteers are people who have full-time jobs, and it's very hard for them to just go with the drop of a hat. That's why in Southern Baptist Life, we could not do what we do if it wasn't for the retirees that are out there that are willing to go and give their time and talents and abilities to be able to help us in disaster relief ministry. And so, like I said before, this is a volunteer ministry, and so they can go and help out when they can and when they're called upon. But the autonomous units, just has a little bit about the guided involvement that's involved there. Disaster relief training is available for all the association and all the churches. We want to make it available for them so they'll be more safe when they go out there, and so they kind of understand what we're doing, why we're trying to make a difference. In Southern Baptist Disaster Relief, we don't want 500 people showing up when we only have a position or we have a place for 150 or 200 to stay. And so that type of situation, we want to make sure that they're taken care of when they get out there in the field. I said a while ago that we're trying to do more and more with our church preparedness, but we do have courses that we teach in the local churches where we do family preparedness, which helps them understand how to have a disaster plan, how to have a disaster kit available to them, not to make it a scare tactic type thing, but just to help them understand that there are disasters that happen in all of our lives and just to be prepared for it when that time happens. Also, we do a church preparedness class that helps them understand how their local church could possibly be a shelter for the people in their community when a disaster takes place. We have a lot of churches across our state that already have crisis closets to where they have a short supply of food that they can make available to those people in their community for the first 24 to 72 hours. But also they, in that crisis closet, a lot of times they'll have things like clothing and even sometimes bed supplies or blankets or even cots that are made available to those people in their local communities. It's amazing when we go into some of these churches and help them understand what they can do locally, of how much their eyes are open and just think, well, we don't have to go to another state or we don't have to go to another country to make a difference in people's lives. We can do it right here in our community when a disaster happens. And then, like I said before, we do state training all across the state of Tennessee. This year we've been involved in 8 regional trainings from Memphis to Mountain City. And we have volunteers that come to these different ones where we do classroom as well as hands-on. We even have training that's available for people who drive forklifts. We have training that's available for people who use bucket trucks. Tennessee is blessed with 3 bucket trucks that we can take out with us when disasters happen. 2 of those will go about 30 feet in the air, and 1 of them will go about 60 feet in the air. So we do a hands-on training on those to make sure that people are very conscious of the safety issues and know what they're doing when they get 60 feet in the air. But we do a thing with our churches, just a pre-event ministry and outreach too, to where they can let the people know in their community of just what's available to them. You know, if something happens in their local community, this church is available to be able to help them as much as they possibly can. But then also we have a leadership council that meets with me on a quarterly basis, 16 people across our state that represents 16 regions here that are building relationships with the local emergency management, but also with other agencies, you know, that can help them understand and know what we are available to be able to do for them. We've had a few occasions to where we've helped some of the power companies when there's been ice storms, to where the power company can concentrate on getting the power back on while we're actually cutting the right-of-way for them with our chainsaw and recovery teams, of getting the brush out of the way so that they can build those power lines quicker in some of those areas. But to let the EMAs and the people in the county mayors and county execs know that we have the volunteers that's available to come and help them, to help with the shelters as far as showers and laundry facilities are concerned. And even we have available to them tractors and trailers to where we can help them move resources into these areas to be able to help out there. We are blessed where someone has donated 18 acres of land to us in the Mount Juliet area. We have built a warehouse in Mount Juliet. It's about 20,000 square feet to where we can actually store a lot of our equipment, but we can also store some of the supplies that we need to be able to take out with us. And so we're so very thankful that God's provided us this piece of material to be able to be right here in the center of the state, to where we can move rapidly and go in any direction to be able to help out in disaster occurrences. And, you know, disasters, prepared churches, some of the benefits of that is to be prepared and be organized to minister in a post-event, of know what to expect to happen after a disaster takes place, to be able to move in and actually make a difference in people's lives until even some of the emergency responders show up. But also to participate in the community recovery. A lot of our local churches will pick up and help people get back into their homes and be able to do drives to help them get furniture and things like that, you know, that's been destroyed. And so all kinds of things of how the local community can participate. but also help them to understand and be involved in the state convention disaster relief plans, to know that we're working hand in hand with not just Tennessee Baptist, but other agencies as well, to be able to cross those denominational lines and make a difference in people's lives. And so, as Amy said from the very beginning there a moment ago, it's one of those things where we have grown quite a bit in the last 4 to 5 years, especially after Hurricane Katrina. We have a lot of people who have become more and more aware of disaster relief ministry. And so we ask ourselves the question a lot of times, where do we go from here? And we just continue to plan and prepare and pray real hard. We never have to use our ministry, but when we do have to use our ministry, we want to be prepared to go out and make a difference in people's lives. Okay? Amy, that's my side of the story there, and if anybody has questions, I'll be glad to speak to those.
Thank you very much, David. That's a really amazing capabilities that you have there, and I expect those hot showers are very much appreciated.
They are, and those people who have to sleep beside those people who have worked all day, they appreciate their showers.
Yeah. Okay, folks, if you want to ask a question or make a comment, please put it in the Q&A panel and address it to the host from the drop-down menu. And I will read the questions or comments aloud, and David will respond by the bridge. Please do keep your question or comment related to today's topic and reasonably concise. And we are ready to begin now, so please enter your comment or question at any time. Okay, first off, right off the bat, we've got Ava Jean all ready to go, and she says, David, thank you. I was fortunate to see firsthand your warehouse and was impressed with your resources. Would you please tell us about the program and who is involved in putting together the buckets of special items for children in disaster?
We had a group from Upper East Tennessee that actually came up with the idea of doing what we call buckets for babies. And in those buckets for babies, there are items that will help, parents. They have diapers, they have baby wipes, they have lotions and things like that. And each one of those things has a new outfit. And on the outside of the bucket, it's labeled whether it's for a boy or for a girl, and actually is labeled for what size or what age group that bucket fits in. And so we make those available after a disaster takes place, where it's at a shelter. There's some of them that will go to hospitals, that when children are coming in and everything, they can present that bucket to those families and take them back home. Each one of those buckets represents somewhere in the neighborhood of about $50 of supplies, and so those have been provided by churches all across the state of Tennessee, and even some of those people that are not involved in disaster relief ministries, they want to make a difference in people's lives.
Fantastic. I have a question from Michael Tarnacci, who asks, where does your funding come from?
We have a very small budget here at the Tennessee Baptist Convention that just helps with upkeep. But when a disaster happens, then donations come in to be able to help us work with the disasters. I must add that when we work with American Red Cross and Salvation Army, all the meals that we cook out there, that money comes from the Red Cross or Salvation Army. They pay for the meals. We provide the equipment, we provide the volunteers, and they take care of the food that we cook out there on the field.
Question from Dominic Urso, who asks, where did you get your shower units and how many people are needed to support them?
We actually have people in the state of Tennessee that build shower units. They just take it on as one of their responsibilities, I guess. But I told someone one time that somebody asked me if we have a plan for a shower trailer, and I said yes. And they said, well, can we have it? And I said, well, no, not really. And they said, well, how can we build it? And I said, well, what usually happens is people look at one of the shower units and says, we can do better. So, and they use that kind of design to just kind of bring about a shower unit. We have shower units. Some of them have two showers in it. We have one that has as many as eight showers in it. And so we do have some very capable people of being able to do that. I would say that there are some companies out there that are building some of those shower units, and you can actually just Google that online. I think right now here in the state of Tennessee, the American Red Cross has brought on two shower units that are ADA approved and all, and so and they bought those from a supplier, I think, out of North Carolina. But usually anywhere from two to four people can actually take care of the shower units. We always specify that we want someone to stay with the shower unit to make sure that it's functional, make sure it stays clean. And we've had some of our senior adult Sunday school classes that have really taken on the responsibilities of providing soap and shampoo and sometimes even towels for the shower units that they send out from their church.
Okay, this next question from Bill Stevenson, and I was going to ask this question, but he beat me to it, so we'll take his. He says, during response, there is a frequent need for your remarkable resources, but we typically are unaware of what is or not available. Do you send a representative to the state or local EOC to help connect your resources with requirements?
There is a person who sits in the pit at the EOC when a disaster happens that is a representative of the state VOAD, and they are very much familiar with what we have available. And so you can make that request to the state EOC, and then they will get back to us and let us know that the need is out there.
Folks, I'm saying these are really good questions, so keep them coming. We've got one from Mickey Kaline who says, I am really astounded by the depth of your organization's mission, services, and assets. In particular, I was surprised by how you work with the power company. How did that relationship come about? Were there any issues, union issues, or other barriers?
It's relationships. It's built on the local level. I'm not going to say that that's going to work in every county or with every power company. This was actually a cooperative over in East Tennessee that we were trying to help out over there. They just were undermanned, and so we just stepped in and tried to help them as much as we could. And so, again, it's building relationships before a disaster ever happens.
Exactly. And this next question from Jim Bass kind of builds on that. He says, could you please talk a bit about the relationship between the Baptist Convention and the local emergency managers? How formal are your partnerships? Do you meet regularly to discuss operations and exercises, et cetera?
I can't say that we meet regularly. We try to keep our names in front of the local emergency management. I am a part of the EMA here in the state of Tennessee. I go to their meetings when they have meetings. We'll attend their state convention that's coming up in September in Jackson, Tennessee, and just let them know who we are as Tennessee Baptist Disaster Relief. I wish there was a time where we could meet regularly with emergency management people and to be able to help them as much as possible.
Another question from Michael Farinacci, who asks, are you indemnified? Are there insurances in place in terms of liability for your volunteers and those they serve during an emergency?
The liability is covered in under the Good Samaritans Act to a certain extent, and then all of our people that work with us are required to have insurance before we go out. We do not take people out there on the field that doesn't have the insurance to be able to cover them. So that's put back in their hands.
I've got kind of a technical question from Frank Bell, which I'll release it up there. He's focused on this alert in mornings, which I don't think you do. But I'll broaden his question to ask about what kind of technology do you all use in managing your resources?
We do have a database. We call it DREW. It's a Disaster Relief Electronic Workspace. where everybody who goes through our training is a part of our database, and even the call-out process is where we can actually email or we can text our team leaders, and they can get their teams together through the Drew system and be able to get back with us and help us understand and know who's going when a disaster happens.
We've come to the, let me double check. I think we've come, oh no, I got two more. Isabel asks, David, attendance and membership in churches are down globally. How do you maintain your volunteers?
Well, I don't see where it's affected our volunteers. You know, those people who are a part of our disaster relief ministry are some of those most, I don't know the word to say, but they're the most committed, I think you, I guess you might say, of church people out there. And so they see what the need is in their community, and they see what the need is worldwide. And so they just want to get involved and make a difference.
Another one from Ava Jean, and she asks, do you have a good number of churches asking for disaster preparedness training? Is the training for the congregation and its facility as well as how they can as well as how they can help in their respective communities?
We don't have a lot of churches that are calling on that. I think there's going to be more because we're really putting a push on the preparedness, not just from Tennessee Baptist, but also from the North American Mission Board, which is the agency that we're working under as far as disaster relief is concerned. But it does go in and help the local church understand what the needs could possibly be in their local community and help them be prepared for it.
I did want to mention your website and some of the resources there. We did link to the section on the disaster relief program and some of these items that you mentioned. There's good guidance there, you know, if people want to take a look at that.
Yes, our disaster relief website is just tndisasterrelief.org. And that's very easy to go to and helps you understand a little bit more about what we do and even gives a history of everything that we've ever responded to in disaster relief. So.
Wonderful. A couple more questions here. Isabel asks, are people afraid to receive your help because you are a church?
We've had some situations like that where at first, they are afraid that we're just going to get out there and proselyte and try to get people, you know, into our churches and everything. But that's not what we're about. We're about helping people, building relationships, and just loving them out of the love of Jesus Christ. And so we've had a lot of people that's is come around when we get into communities and work and see what we're trying to do and know what we're about.
I have a question from Lori. She says, Lori Weaver, to what extent are your volunteers trained within the ICS aspect of response? Do leaders receive higher levels of incident command training or formal incident management team certification?
Yes, our team leaders all go through the incident command training. We actually have a Southern Baptist incident command training that we do. And we ask even our our regular volunteers that go out if they have the opportunity to actually go on FEMA's website and actually take the ICS 100 and 200 classes just so that they understand a little bit more about what ICS is all about.
Good deal. And then you mentioned you do have do respond on the national level, not just in Tennessee.
We do. We'll go wherever we're needed. In the United States, as a matter of fact, several of our teams have actually been out of the country. We've gone to Japan after the tsunami. We've gone to Southeast Asia. We've been in Haiti quite a bit, you know, after the earthquake down there. So we respond wherever we're needed.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, I don't see any more questions on the list now, and I have scrolled all the way down. So I think we know you're a busy man. I think we're going to go ahead and wrap it up for today. Folks, please, before you run off, take a moment or two to give us a little feedback. David, on behalf of Aegene and myself and all our participants, thank you very much for being with us today and sharing this information with us, and for all you and your volunteers do. It's quite amazing.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to share about Tennessee Baptist Disaster Relief, and if we can ever be a help to any of you, don't hesitate to give me a call.
Oh, great. And there is some contact information on your website, I believe. So
yes, there is. Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for everyone for participating today. Great questions. Really appreciated them. And everyone, please have a great afternoon. We are adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.